Hey everyone, welcome to another deep dive with us. Today we're going to be exploring the world of clinical psychology supervision.
Sounds fascinating.
Yeah, it is. We'll be looking at this research paper called To Conceal or Not to Conceal: Supervisee and Client Identity Processes in Clinical Supervision. And it dives into this concept of cultural concealment.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it turns out that therapists in training sometimes hide parts of their own cultural identities and even aspects of their clients' identities from their supervisors.
Oh, wow. That's really surprising, especially, you know, in a field that's all about empathy and understanding people.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So before we get into the nitty gritty, I think it would be helpful to start with the basics.
Sure.
What exactly is clinical supervision, and why is it such a big deal for these therapists who are just starting out?
Well, it's kind of like an apprenticeship, you know, for mental health professionals. It's where these new therapists called supervisees work closely with these experienced clinicians, you know, to kind of hone their skills and just navigate all the challenges that come with the profession.
So it's not just about like book learning.
No, not at all.
It's about actually like developing into a well-rounded.
Exactly.
Ethical.
Yeah, a real professional.
Professional.
Yeah.
I got it.
Yeah.
So when we talk about cultural concealment in this context, what exactly do we mean by that?
Well, the study actually looks at two different levels.
Okay.
First, you have what they call supervisee-focused concealment, and that's where the therapist in training hides parts of their own cultural identity.
Okay.
And then the second one is client-focused concealment, and that's when they downplay or avoid discussing aspects of their client's cultural identity.
Two levels of concealment.
Wow.
That's really interesting.
It is. It really kind of digs into the complexities.
I can only imagine. So why would this happen in the first place?
That's the big question, isn't it?
Yeah. What would drive these supervisees to conceal these parts of themselves and their clients?
Well, power dynamics play a huge role. Well, supervisors are in a position of authority, right? They're evaluating the supervisee's every move.
Uh-huh.
So that power dynamic can make the supervisee hesitant to reveal anything that might be perceived negatively. You know, they don't want to be judged.
They're trying to like protect themselves.
Exactly. It's a very human reaction.
Yeah, I can see that.
Think about it. You're in this new environment trying to learn, prove yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And you're worried that bringing up your cultural differences or even those of your clients could make you look biased or unskilled.
So it's this like self-preservation thing.
Exactly. Okay. You don't want to rock the boat.
Right. It all makes sense.
Yeah.
But it also makes me wonder about the environment itself.
The environment.
Yeah. Like if the supervisor isn't creating a space that feels safe.
I see what you mean.
To talk about these things.
Yeah. If it doesn't feel culturally sensitive, then the supervisee might hold back. You know, yeah. They might not feel comfortable bringing their full selves or their clients' experiences into the discussion.
It's like if the supervisor hasn't shown that they're open to talking about cultural issues.
Yeah.
The supervisee might just assume it's off limits.
Right. It's not always about being explicitly told, don't talk about this. Sometimes it's more about what's not being said or modeled.
Oh, so the supervisor's own role in behavior, their own cultural competence.
Exactly.
Could unintentionally perpetuate this whole cycle of concealment.
And that's the danger, isn't it? Because if a supervisor avoids those conversations,
right,
the supervisee might think that's just how it's done.
Yeah. And it can really shut down the opportunity for open dialogue.
For sure.
Okay. So we've got this cultural concealment happening, and it's stemming from these power dynamics and this fear of judgment.
Mm-hmm.
But what impact does this actually have on the supervisory relationship?
Well, the study found that this concealment, whether it's focused on the supervisee or the client, really impacts a key element of supervision.
And that is
the working alliance.
Okay, so for those of us listening who aren't therapists, can you explain what the working alliance is?
Sure. Basically, it's the bond of trust and collaboration between the supervisor and the supervisee.
Got it.
It's the foundation for growth and learning. Without it, the whole process is weakened.
So if the supervisee feels like they can't talk about certain cultural things.
Yeah.
It erodes that trust, creates distance.
Exactly, like a crack in the foundation.
Exactly. And I would imagine that lack of trust could then make them less likely to bring up other issues too.
Oh, absolutely. Once that sense of safety is gone, it can affect all areas of communication.
That makes sense. I'm also curious about the connection between the two levels of concealment we talked about.
Yeah.
Did the study find any link between them?
Actually, it's really interesting. The study found that supervisees who felt they had to hide their own cultural identity were even more likely to avoid talking about their clients' identities as well.
So it's almost like one type of concealment fuels the other.
Exactly. It's a ripple effect.
Yeah.
And it shows how interconnected these issues are.
And it speaks volumes about the responsibility that supervisors have to create an environment where these discussions are not only allowed but encouraged.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we've established that cultural concealment is as happening, and it's having some negative consequences.
Right.
But let's zoom out for a second.
Hmm.
Why should we as people outside the world of clinical psychology care about this?
That's a great question.
What are the bigger implications here?
The implications go far beyond just the individuals involved. If these therapists in training aren't able to talk about these issues, it impacts their development as culturally competent professionals.
Meaning they might not be equipped to understand.
That's right.
And effectively help the diverse range of clients they're going to see in their careers.
Exactly. And that contributes to the biases and blind spots that create inequities in mental health care.
And so we end up with a system where certain groups don't get the culturally sensitive care that they deserve.
And that has very real consequences.
It's not just theoretical.
No, it's about real people getting the help they need.
Exactly. And there's another layer to this too, right?
Oh, yeah.
The idea of parallel process.
Right.
Can you remind us what that is?
Basically, it suggests that the dynamics we see in supervision often show up in the therapy room as well.
So if we have cultural concealment happening between the supervisor and supervisee, it's likely to show up between the therapist and their clients too.
Exactly. And that can have a huge EE impact on the therapeutic relationship and the client's progress.
Wow. This is heavier than I thought.
It is.
This seemingly niche topic is actually touching on some major issues.
For sure.
Equity access in mental health care.
It's all connected.
It really is. You know, it makes me think about my own experiences.
Oh, yeah.
In different learning environments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, times when I've held back from sharing certain parts of myself.
Yeah.
Especially when I wasn't sure how they'd be received.
It's a common experience. We all want to feel accepted and valued.
Right.
And sometimes that means trying to fit in, even if it means downplaying parts of ourselves.
But as we're seeing, that self-protection comes at a cost.
It does. It's a balancing act, isn't it?
Yeah.
Figuring out how to be authentic while also navigating these complex social dynamics.
It really is. And this research is making me think about all the places where that balance is being tested.
It's everywhere, isn't it?
It really is. It really is. You know, this paper actually gives some specific examples of what this cultural concealment looks like in practice.
Interesting.
What are some of the things that supervisees said they were hiding about themselves?
Well, one thing that came up a lot was this idea of supervisees toning down their cultural expression.
Toning it down.
Yeah, like trying to fit in, trying to fit this mold that didn't really match their true identity.
So they might avoid sharing personal experiences or beliefs.
Exactly. Or even downplay their own cultural perspectives when discussing cases.
So not necessarily lying.
Right.
But more like subtly minimizing those parts of themselves.
Yeah.
They're afraid might be judged.
That's it. And it can be really draining, you know, constantly feeling like you have to filter yourself.
Right.
To present this version that you think is going to be more acceptable.
It's almost like those parts of them are being seen as irrelevant.
In a way, yeah. Like they're not important to the work.
Hmm. And what about on the client side?
Mm-hmm.
What kinds of things were they avoiding talking about when it came to their client's identity?
Well, even if a client was openly sharing their own cultural experiences,
The
supervisee might still be hesitant to really dive into those issues with their supervisor.
So even when the client's bringing it up,
The
supervisee might still shy away from it.
It happens. They might steer the conversation towards more neutral topics.
Interesting.
Or downplay how important the client's background is to their problems.
It's like they're afraid to make those connections.
Yeah. Afraid to acknowledge that culture could be playing a role.
And that's a missed opportunity.
It is.
For both the supervisee and the client.
Absolutely. A missed opportunity for growth and understanding. It also reinforces this idea that cultural issues aren't as important as other parts of the client's experience.
Which keeps feeding into this system where cultural differences are just pushed aside.
Sadly, yes.
Even in a field that's supposed to be all about understanding the whole person.
And that's the danger, right? It highlights the need to move beyond just acknowledging differences to actively valuing them, seeing them as strengths, not weaknesses.
You know what makes me wonder? If this is happening in clinical psychology, a field that's so focused on empathy and understanding, where else might we be seeing this?
That's the question, isn't it? We have to think about all the places where there are these power imbalances, where people are afraid of being judged or rejected.
Education, workplaces, even our personal relationships.
Absolutely. It's not just therapists and supervisors.
Right. This is about recognizing these patterns everywhere. Yeah. In all parts of our lives.
It is. And it's about being honest with ourselves.
Yeah.
Asking ourselves, when do we choose to hide parts of who we are and why?
That's a good question. And it brings us back to the impact this concealment has on the people involved.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be easy to always feel like you have to hide.
It's not. The researchers found that it really took a toll on the supervisees. You know, a lot of them talked about feeling isolated.
Yeah.
Like they couldn't fully be a part of the learning process.
It makes sense, though, right?
It does.
If you're not bringing your whole self to the table,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to get as much out of it.
And it impacts their development as therapists, too.
How so?
Well, if they're not comfortable talking about cultural issues and supervision,
right,
they're less likely to do it with their clients either.
And that ultimately impacts the quality of care that those clients receive.
It's a chain reaction.
It is.
Yeah.
It really underscores how important it is to address this at the training level.
Absolutely.
So what can we do about it? I mean, the researchers didn't just point out the problem.
No, they didn't.
They offered some solutions, too.
They did.
What are some ways we can create better training environments
and
break the cycle of concealment?
One big thing is for supervisors to really focus on creating a sense of safety and openness right from the start.
So being very clear that those conversations are welcome.
Yeah.
That cultural differences are seen as valuable.
Exactly. And it goes beyond just saying it too. Supervisors need to show through their actions that mm-hmm. they're willing to engage in these conversations.
That cultural competence is a priority.
It has to be. More than just words.
Right. Actions speak louder. What about the training programs themselves?
Yeah.
What can they do?
Well, they need to make cultural competence a core part of the curriculum.
Okay.
You know, make sure that supervisees are getting the knowledge and skills they need.
So it's not just an elective?
No, it has to be woven into the fabric of how therapists are trained.
I like that. But what about in the moment?
In the moment?
Yeah. During supervision sessions.
Uh-huh.
Are there any tools or strategies that supervisors can use to address this head on?
One thing that the researchers suggested was to have regular check-ins or feedback sessions.
Interesting. So creating dedicated time for supervisees to share what's going on.
Exactly.
To voice any concern.
Yeah. Including any instances of cultural concealment they might be seeing.
It seems like that could be a really powerful way.
It is.
To address those power imbalances.
For sure.
And make sure that the relationship feels safe for these conversations.
So it's about being proactive.
Yeah. Yeah. Instead of just hoping it'll happen on its own.
Exactly. And it reinforces the idea that supervision is a two-way street.
Right.
It's not just about the supervisor telling the supervisee what to do.
It's a collaboration.
It is. Both sides are learning and growing.
I like that. And those check-ins could also be helpful in addressing those instances of modeling.
Oh, yeah. Where the supervisor might be unintentionally discouraging cultural discussions. Right. It gives the supervisee a chance to bring that up.
Yeah.
And for the supervisor to reflect on their own behavior.
Yeah. And make changes if needed.
It's about open communication and feedback.
Right.
So that these sensitive issues can be addressed in a constructive way.
It's encouraging to know that there are things we can do.
Yeah.
But I keep thinking about how this isn't just a therapy thing.
It's not.
You mentioned this dynamic showing up in other areas of life, too.
Yeah, I did.
What are the bigger implications of that?
Well, I think it's important to remember that if this is happening in a field that's all about helping people, it's probably happening everywhere. And
right.
the impact can be huge.
Because it's ultimately about silencing people.
It is. Silencing voices and perspectives that need to be heard.
And when we do that, we all lose out.
We do. We lose out on innovation, creativity, understanding.
It makes me wonder how many great ideas, how many solutions we're missing out on.
Yeah.
Because people feel like they have to conform.
It's a sobering thought, isn't it?
It really is.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. It feels like we're talking about something so much bigger than just, you know, clinical supervision here.
It is. It really is.
This pressure to conform, to fit in.
Yeah.
And how that affects our sense of self.
Absolutely.
Our ability to connect authentically with others.
You've hit the nail on the head. It's not just about hiding specific cultural things.
No.
It's about this feeling.
Yeah.
Like you can't truly be yourself.
And that takes a toll.
It does.
So if we're constantly editing ourselves,
right,
trying to present this version of us that we think is acceptable,
mm-hmm.
How does that impact our relationships, our work,
everything,
our well-being?
It's like we're living in this muted world.
Wow.
You know, always holding back, always second guessing.
Yeah.
And it's incredibly isolating.
Right.
It prevents us from really connecting,
yeah,
from belonging.
And it's not just about us as individuals either, right?
No, it's not.
Think about society.
Exactly.
If we're not encouraging people to embrace what makes them unique,
yeah,
all those perspectives,
mm-hmm,
we're missing out,
yeah,
on so much potential.
Absolutely. Diversity is key.
It is.
It's what drives innovation and creativity and progress.
When everyone feels safe.
Right.
To bring their ideas to the table.
Yeah, to contribute.
That's when real change happens.
That's when things move forward.
So how do we get there?
Mm.
How do we shift from this culture of hiding,
yeah,
to a culture of embracing?
It's a big challenge, for sure.
It feels huge.
It is. But I think change is possible.
Okay, good.
It starts with awareness.
Awareness of.
This dynamic.
Yeah.
This concealment.
Right.
That it's happening all around us.
So paying attention to those times,
mm-hmm,
when we might be censoring ourselves.
Yes. Or when we see others being silenced.
Or marginalized.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And once we're aware of it,
yeah,
we can start challenging it.
Challenging the norms.
The expectations,
yeah,
that contribute to this culture of concealment.
We have to ask ourselves, are we creating environments where everyone feels included?
Right. Where those diverse voices can be heard.
And if not,
then we need to have those tough conversations.
Speak up.
Advocate for change.
For ourselves and for others.
Yes. It's about moving beyond just tolerating differences.
Right.
To truly embracing them, seeing them as strengths, not weaknesses.
That's a powerful shift.
It is.
It makes me wonder if we can create that kind of environment.
Yeah.
In our own lives.
In our own circles.
Can that ripple outwards?
I think it can.
Create a more accepting society.
I believe so. It starts with small actions.
They add up.
They do. Each of us creating those inclusive spaces.
Yeah.
Challenging those biases.
It can make a difference.
It can.
It's a vision worth striving for.
It is.
A world where everyone feels seen and heard and valued.
For exactly who they are.
Exactly. This has been such a thought-provoking conversation.
It has been.
It feels like we've just scratched the surface.
We have.
But it's given me so much to think about.
It's been great exploring these ideas with you.
It has.
And I hope everyone listening will take some time to reflect on this too.
Yeah, think about how cultural concealment might be showing up in your own lives.
In the systems around you.
Because change starts with each of us.
It does.
By embracing who we are,
mm-hmm,
and creating spaces for others to do the same.
Absolutely.
We can build a more inclusive and equitable world.
A better world for everyone.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.
It's been a pleasure.
Into the hidden world of cultural concealment. It's a conversation that needs to continue.